everyone is a star child, made of stardust and the infinite potential of the universe. This extraordinary, fearless something in each of us clamors for freedom from the bonds of fear, conformity, and an ordinary life. Welcome to Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot, where practical tools and solutions from the intersection of mind-body medicine, science, and spiritual well-being awaken and empower you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. Conflict seems to be rampant. It's within our homes, in our communities, and also amongst nations. And the question becomes, of course, why can't we just all get along? What is it about us and our mindsets, the way we think, the way we deal with others, and what we think is necessary in order to get our needs met that creates these kinds of conflicts? Today, we're going to take a look at what do we need to do in order to change those mindsets, and then how do we bridge those divides, that divisiveness, in order to create more collaboration and understanding and unity? How do we overcome the divisions, promote unity, and foster peace? So joining me today is my guest, Hawa Kassat.
Hey there, Balin. How are you?
Hey, peaceful warrior. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation. It's been a long time.
Yes. And I'm glad to have you here again. As you said, it's been a long time coming, because of course you and I met in July of 2010 at your yoga retreat.
Yeah, that was July 2010 was a rejuvenation retreat. I like to consider it something more than just a yoga retreat. We were in West Virginia, if I remember correctly, and that program in particular was a integration of swimming, movement, team building. I don't believe if your retreat had sweat lodge ceremony or not.
It sure did, but it did have the sweat lodge. But you know that there were some challenges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of trying to really, I think, getting it to the place that you wanted to be. But yeah, we absolutely had sweat lodge.
Yeah, and then we had some drum circles and sitting around the fire. And then, of course, we have the yoga and the meditation. Those were fantastic events.
I
did those as fundraisers to raise money for our youth programs in Washington, D.C. at that time.
Oh, okay. You know, I don't think I was aware of that particular aspect.
Yeah. Those retreats in particular were called the Rejuvenation Retreats. And I was bringing adults from the cities into nature to raise money for our youth programs that were happening in D.C. with youth in middle and high schools throughout D.C. And one of the revelations I had during, I think it was maybe your 2010 retreat, we were all sitting around the bonfire, and it was like 50 or so adults that were all present in this really big retreat. And I thought to myself, wow, it's amazing. All these adults get to get outside. They get to be in nature. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if all the listeners are aware, but the Environmental Protection Agency, they released a study. The EPA released a study many years back that estimates that about 90% of our lives, our entire lives, we spend indoors.
Meaning, really?
Yeah. I mean, and if you think about it, first of all, all of us are sleeping inside. So we're sleeping inside, we're covered with a roof, four walls. That's about 40, 50% of your life right there sleeping. And then most of us are working inside. So now you're going from your home, being in your automobile or being in the train, that's also considered being inside. And so you're still inside, and then you get out of the car, you walk into your office building, and now you're inside again. And so by the time, from the moment you're born till the moment you die, you will spend 90% of your life or more indoors, which is a crazy statistic. And
Yeah.
a lot of the mission of my work back with One Common Unity and the Fly By Light program was, how do we bring youth and adults into the outdoors? How do we get people back outside to combat what Richard Loew had coined as nature deficit disorder? And nature deficit disorder is the process of us moving into deep places of disconnection from land, and becoming overly stressed and not having the resources to process our stress because we spend so much time stuck inside. And so there's a whole field of study right now around looking at young people in particular. If you look at like a classroom and you see the kid that's like bouncing off the walls and the hardest kid to keep track of and seeming to always be getting into trouble. If you take that kid outside with the same group of kids from inside the classroom, that child that was the problem child becomes the leader of the group of the kids. They need to be outside. They need to be running. They need to be playing. It helps with ADHD, attention deficit disorder. It helps with integration. There's just so many benefits to being outdoors. And so part of the work I was doing back then was really driven by this idea of, how do we get more adults outside? How do we get more kids outside? To combat that statistic, that devastating idea that we spend 90% of our time in our lives inside, trapped within four walls. So that's some of the inspiration between my newest project called Roots to Sky Sanctuary and the work I do over there on the regenerative farm. We're building a healing arts center and a regenerative farm in West Virginia. When I met you, that was part of the work I was doing in bringing people to nature to connect them in spaces of healing, and then raising money to then use for the youth programs. And to go full circle really quick, Balan, I had this revelation around the fire with your group. And I thought to myself, because by this point I wasn't bringing kids yet into nature. But I had this realization at that point. I was like, man, these adults, they have this great opportunity to be outside. But then I'm working with these kids in the city, and most of the kids we were working with, they've never even left the city. They've never gone more than 20 blocks from where they were born and raised. So that's when I made a commitment. I was like, this is the last adult retreat I'm going to do in West Virginia. And next time I'm going to do this retreat in West Virginia, I'm going to bring the kids with me from the city into nature. And that happened in 2012 was the first year we brought the kids into nature for the Fly By Light youth program.
Yeah. And so then I think that's a pretty consistent aspect of the work that you do, you know, with, I think, adults also. Cause again, then in I think it was it 2015 that we went to, Iceland for the yoga retreat, Fire and Ice.
And Ice. Yeah. I've been continuing to lead these retreats overseas. I've led retreats around the world. Iceland was when you came back for another excursion with me. I brought students to Peru and Nepal, Bali, and the Dominican Republic, Mexico. I've been taking students around the world, even Cambodia recently. My most recent international trip was taking students with me to Cambodia for a pilgrimage and a yoga retreat.
Yeah. So, and I remember with the trip to Iceland, you know, the thing, of course, it was after Christmas and over New Year's. And so one, you know, we got to see the Aurora Borealis, right? The Northern Lights. And, you know, bringing the new year, you know, in Iceland. And, you know, it's a unique place with a unique people. And I remember, and I just have to tell you this, I remember this one time, you know, again, there was a lot of stuff that was done outdoors. And, one of the things that we did, we actually were at a pool facility, and there was the hot tub outdoors. It was nighttime. It was, you know, freezing in terms of temperature. And I'm sitting out there in the hot tub looking up at the sky, and it's beautiful, right? And I said, after a period of time, I said, okay, enough of this cold. I can see I did this. I'm getting out. But the thing was, in terms of with the people, there was nobody on the trip that I knew except you, because I'm very much an adventurer, right? So to me, it was an opportunity to be, you know, in a different place, because travel, I say it frees my mind, because I get to meet new people. There's a new culture, there's new food, there's what are we going to do? But, you know, obviously the yoga is to help connect me to myself, my inner self, and my mind and body and space, to have that united. But again, the opportunity to meet new people and connect with people that are similar, in the sense of we're all here together. So there's some commonality, some common unity, as you like to say, because we're all here together. And, but then there's the differences, and explore that, but also to expand my thoughts about who I am and what's possible. Right.
Absolutely. No, I love that. And traveling also frees up my mind. And it's one of the reasons I lead a lot of these trips. It's a way for me to also get out and to explore and find a new place in the world with a bunch of strangers or new friends or old students that are coming back for more. So I think that when we tap into and when we see and visit and connect with people of different cultures and traditions, it helps to create a lot of perspective. And I think a lot of the work that I associate myself with and that I spend time learning about is how we can create peace through perspective, and how perspective is really critical for peace building work. And without that perspective, we can get caught sometimes and stuck within one limited view of the world. And going back to the youth work that I was doing for about 20 years, the young people that would go and travel outside of DC and spend a week inside of a national park or traveling through the mountains of the Appalachia with me, those young people would come back to the city with such a greater expansive view of the world, and they'd have so much more respect and honor for like just how vast the planet can be. And it's easy, like if we live and kind of situate our lives within these like 30 square blocks, or, you know, and we spend every day of every waking hour kind of going through the same routine and moving and traveling back and forth through the same space, we kind of forget that there's a lot of other ways to look at the world and be in the world. There's a lot of other ways to be in the world. Sometimes like people would come off of my retreats and they would be like, man, we should rename your retreat to Quit Your Job Retreat, because so many people would come home and like quit their jobs or like decide that they were going to, you know, completely change what they were doing with their careers. That's what these experiences can do when you do that. And if you're an adult or if you're a young person, these times can become really formative and can help shake out all the cobwebs.
And the other thing too, before we go any further, I want to tell you too, is, you know, the thing about travel, of course, is that the way things happen or don't happen, you know, we have to adapt. And so, of course, we were supposed to catch a flight from Reykjavik to Akureyri, and we weren't able to because of weather. So we had to take, you know, a coach from Reykjavik to Akureyri. And I want to thank you for coming back to the rest stop and getting me where I had been left.
Oh wow, yeah. You remember that? That was hilarious. Yeah, you were not on the bus, and the bus was moving, and I'm doing a head count, and I'm like, we're missing somebody. I was like,
no, the bus wasn't moving, it had left.
That's what I mean. The bus had left, and then I was like, no, we gotta turn around. We left Ballin. Cause you were just taking your sweet old time.
No, that's not true. No. What it was I had gone back to check for somebody else that was on the trip to make sure she didn't get left. Oh. And in that process of checking on her, I got left.
You got left. Well, either way, you got found. You got left, and then you got found. Left and found. And then we put you back on the bus, and we kept going all the way to Akureyri. Yeah, it was a fantastic trip to Iceland. We were really lucky to have caught the Aurora Borealis, and you know, the Northern Lights are exquisite.
Although, of course, it's still a stunning place. And, you know, what I want to do is go ahead and, you know, share some of your background, you know, with the audience, so they'll know who you are. And so Hawa Kassat is a celebrated global humanitarian, author, educator, nonprofit leader, TEDx speaker, podcast host, and yogi. He has over 20 years of experience training teachers around the globe and leading dynamic shamanic classes at conferences and festivals. He has authored 4 books and produced 4 documentary films. In the year 2000, he co-founded One Common Unity, an award-winning nonprofit organization that heals cycles of violence and trauma through social emotional literacy, conflict transformation, mindfulness, mental health, and arts programming. So that is located in Washington, D.C. And as you already mentioned, you recently launched Roots to Sky Sanctuary, a 125-acre regenerative farm and healing arts center situated in northern Appalachia, where he serves as the managing partner. So I tell you what, let's take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to go ahead and jump into the deep water. Heaven Abounds in You takes you on an inward journey of discovery that dramatically transforms your outward experience of life. Discover the power of belief. Utilize it in connection with science to create a vision of meaning and purpose that pulls you forward. Let go of the meager me to discover the magnificent me. Let go of your painful past and live life free from fear, worry, and stagnation. Experience an abundant universe as you powerfully create happiness, relationships, health, and limitless opportunities. When you heal your mind, all things are possible. Today we're talking about peace from conflict, escaping us versus them thinking. So before the break, my guest and I, Hawa Kassat, I said, let's go ahead and jump into the deep water, peaceful warrior. And for those folks who may not be used to deep water, you know, get you some water wings, get you a flotation device, whatever you need to keep you afloat and in the conversation, because we gonna go there. Because you know, the shallow water is not where you gonna learn these lessons. And more importantly, you know, when I think about these natural occurrences, you know, when it's turbulent, when there's a hurricane coming, you know, where do the fish and the animals go? They go to deeper water, right? Why? Because that's where it's quieter, where it's calmer, where again, it's the turbulence and the disturbance is not in the deep water. That's where the safety is, right?
That's right. That's right.
So again, so we're going to go ahead and jump into this. And so, you know, the first thing I think about, of course, is when it comes to us versus thinking, one, what's going on with us, you know, mentally and psychologically? And then why is this us versus them mentality? Why is it so persistent?
You know, I like to preface all this with saying, you know, I'm one that has been studying and working in this field for a couple of decades, but I am by no means a a person with all the answers to the global conflicts and the global problems. They transcend just any one person's ideas of right and wrong. And my feelings on the matter are rooted within a cultural clash of forces that include how we educate, how we learn, how we culturalize each other to being in community. I think community is a critical part of how we develop peaceful relationships. And when I think about the global conflicts, I have a hard time separating global conflict from interpersonal conflict. And I think a lot of the problems that we see in the world are connected to the ways that we see conflict and violence expressed and manifested within our homes and our personal lives, in our relationships with our children, our family members, our colleagues, what comes up for us in our neighborhoods, while we're driving the car down the street and parked at a red light, what comes up for us when we're talking to a representative on the phone with our car insurance company and, you know, get really frustrated or irritated and take it out on them. I feel that there is an opportunity to interrupt the tendency of us becoming spiteful, angry, hateful. And I think we interrupt those cycles by learning and feeling into and noticing when irritation and agitation begins to arise within us. And when we can start doing that, we can start to interrupt what becomes kind of a spiraling, and a turning towards what becomes violence and disagreement, which becomes polarization within our communities, within our homes, within our nations, and within the world. So I think the microcosm impacts the macrocosm. I think that there's a inseparable link between those two. We have to really understand that there's no separation, that our internal ecosystem is what is constantly feeding the external ecosystem, and that it's a echo chamber, it's a feedback loop. So what's happening outside in the external environment is also deeply impacting us inside. And I don't believe that one is more important than the other. I think that they're both equally vital within shaping our trajectory, our experience day to day, but also for generations in the future. Violence is something that we can become culturalized to, or we can become desensitized to, and then we become sort of habituated to violence, right? Because we see it all the time. We think it's normal. We think it's how we should act. And then that's how we react. But in the same way, we can normalize kindness. We can normalize compassion, where that becomes our new default, right? That becomes how we respond when things get really hairy, when things get really tough. We respond with generosity. So I do think it's a process.
So generosity instead of trying to choke somebody out.
Yeah. Absolutely.
whether that's literally in terms of literally putting your hands on somebody, or figuratively with words. So, you know what? So the thing that, Howard, here's what I know to be true based upon my experiences. Number one, the average person doesn't even like themselves. And if you don't like yourself, then that creates this internal conflict and dissonance that then, as you also said, as within, it's as without, because what's in you is what's coming out of you, right? And so folks, like, you know, I got a cup of tea here, right? So all that's coming out of that cup is what's in it, the tea. It's not going to be water, juice, champagne, anything else but what's in it. So there's that aspect. And if I don't like me, then I'm going to be looking to somebody else to get them to give me what I don't have, in this case, you know, self-love and approval. And then that creates conflicts in the relationships. If I can't get from you what I want, to then that sense of neediness and or can be become desperation, i.e. fear, causes, if I make it personal, I then act in ways that are driven by that fear, harmful, negative, seeking, grasping, right? The other part to that too, though, is, and we're going to get into this because I know you call it binary thinking, is the fact that our brains are hardwired. One is for our survival, and there's different aspects to that. So one of those things is identifying people and things in the environment, assigning meaning to it in terms of, you know, its place and how it's going to impact me. And therefore, if I'm safe or unsafe based upon what it is and the meaning I've assigned to it. And then obviously that sense of assigning meaning gives us comfort, but it also can be wrong. If I see you as them, meaning, and not me, then it becomes you're the other. And what do I have to do for me and mine to keep you from getting access to the resources? And what do I believe is okay to do to you because you're not part of you and me and my tribe, including kill you in order to keep me and mine safe and having access to the resources that we need to survive?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, I think what we see happen there's a few things that happen. One is you have a scarcity mentality, which drives a lot of the hoarding and the greed. But then you also just have greed for the sake of greed, right? I think us and them is connected.
What do you mean by when you say greed for the sake of greed?
I think there's some people that just really enjoy having and collecting and gathering all they can, just for the sake of having more and more and more. There is perhaps some neuroses that is connected to the accumulation of wealth and riches, that even though it is more than what anyone can possibly do anything with in one lifetime, the greed is almost becomes an addiction. We become addicted, or someone becomes addicted to accumulating, to possessing, to seeing their bank balance rise from 100 million to 500 million to 1 billion. And at that point, I almost see it as like greed for the sake of greed, where greed becomes an addiction. And then you have other people that are living out of real scarcity. You have people that are living day to day in places where there is not enough food to eat, where there's not enough clean water, where they're living in homes that have no heat and it's freezing outside. You have people that are literally day to day thinking about survival as a real biological impulse,
right?
Survival in the sense of if I don't enter this competition, and if I'm not thinking about this as us versus them, I will not be alive in a week. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a couple of layers to how we can understand the us versus them dichotomy. I agree very much that from the beginning of what you said, a lack of self-love, not really being happy with who you are or who I am as a person, that feeling can create a lot of envy. It can create a lot of jealousy. Mm-hmm. It can create more of this us versus them mentality. When we go deeper into those cycles, we create more separation. We start to feel like we want to do what we can to put other people down instead of lifting people up. Because we feel like there's a scarcity. We feel like there's not enough to go around. There's not enough of anything to go around, whether that's physical, material, spiritual, emotional. So that can become a trap to our ability to understand what true peace looks like. And it's very cultural. It's very connected to a cultural phenomenon, right? Like, not all cultures have felt that way and been that way. There's incredible examples of nations here, indigenous people here on what is now known as the United States of America. There's incredible examples of people that had no word for poverty, you know, where richness and wealth was defined by how much you gave away and not how much you accumulated. There's incredible examples of societies and traditions that have honored different ways of being. The Blackfoot Indians is one example from northern, like North America, like border of Canada, who've done this. So,
yeah. So I think the thing too, though, and you've alluded to it though, is when the scarcity mentality of there's not enough. Again, it still inherently goes back to a belief that I'm not enough. You know, so I think that sense of not being enough, I think is critical and essential to it. And I think part of that even comes from a confusion about just us as beings versus doings. And so if I think I'm a doing and I do it wrong, then of course there's something wrong with me, as opposed to who I am as a being is just already whole and complete. And what I did, I may have goofed it up, you know, or made a mess, or it didn't work out the way I hoped, whatever it is. But in the confusing the identity, my being with my doing, then I think that again continues to feed that sense of, you know, of inadequacy. And I, you know, and I think I mentioned this to you when we talked, you know, earlier in the week. It was all of a sudden what came to me was it came to me in this way, which was inadequacy is an illusion, right? Separation is an illusion. And I said to my mind then, I said, oh, you finally got that, huh?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And here's the thing. I just want to tie this to something to you too. I love how you think about things, because it tends to be kind of unique, right? And kind of distinctive. And I remember when I first heard the name of your organization, Common Unity, and I was like, oh, that's community broken up right there with Common and Unity. And I've never heard anybody else, you know, characterize it in that way. And so I think that's too is what's missing, is a sense of community is, you know, so whether we're talking about immediate community or whether we're talking about global, whether we're talking about in the universe, that really community is common unity. And that being that sent recognition that I'm not separate from myself. I'm not separate from you. I'm not separate from the globe or the universe, because everything is composed of energy. Therefore, it's all connected. So there is no separation, even though the vessel looks different and appears to be separate.
Absolutely. Well, look, so Balan, there's also, I mean, in the absolute reality, in ultimate truth, mm-hmm. what you're speaking about and what I'm speaking about is completely accurate, right? All blood mm-hmm. runs red. We all are connected through this tapestry of being human. But the reality, there's the absolute reality, the absolute truth, but then there's the relative truth. There's mm-hmm. the relative reality. And the relative reality is very clear that people in the world are treated differently because their skin color is darker and more melanated. People in the world are treated differently because they chant or sing or pray in a way that's different than the dominant culture believes is the right way to pray. There's people in the world that are treated differently because of their sexual orientation or even the sex that they were born into, right? There's discrimination that is real, that happens every day to people that are physically different. And there are people that might be discriminated against all the time because they don't have the physical ability to go on long runs or jogs. The truth is that people are different. And that's the relative reality, is that there are differences. The absolute reality is those differences should not change how we see, how we love, how we treat each other, right? People shouldn't be treated differently because of relative differences in how we look, appear, how we practice our spirituality. But we are. People around the world are treated differently. And there are those who are in power. There are dominant cultures. There are dominant groups of people who profit, who have power, and who continue to oppress those in marginalized groups, right? So like the beauty of understanding what us versus them is all about is like there's a friction, there's a tension, there's a desire of coming to become whole. Like we want to be whole as people. And all struggles around the world have been between people who are marginalized and are disempowered or left without power at the table or not a seat at the table, between those who own the table and who sit at the table and give the orders, right? And so the question that I have is like, how do we bridge the absolute truth to the relative truth? And I think part of that dance and that work is what is perspective building. It's what is peace building. Peace building, perspective building is rooted within dismantling the difference between how we treat each other on the relative scale.
Okay, so I tell you what, let's take a break right now. Then we come back up. We're going to pick up with that, all right?
All right.
Heaven abounds in you, enlightens, uplifts, inspires, and invites you to live a life that's engaged, joyous, and limitless, the sweet spot of life. Take this journey in oneness. We are and have all that God, the infinite creative source of the universe, is. You are infinite potentiality, and the kingdom of heaven is within you. Heaven abounds in you. Dr. Balan A. Durr here with my special guest, Hawa Kassat, and we were talking about peace from conflict, escaping us versus them thinking. And before the break, we left off, we were basically talking about how are we going to overcome division so that we can promote unity and build peace. So you were saying, Hawa.
I think listening is pretty essential for building peace and overcoming conflict. I do want to say that like conflict is not inherently bad, right? I think
correct
for those that understand conflict transformation and resolution work, conflict is a natural part of life. Conflict exists everywhere at all times. It is conflict which makes a diamond, right? It is conflicting forces. It is the friction and the heat of coal that's like pressed together that ultimately turns into a diamond. So mm-hmm. like, you know, conflict is not bad in and of itself. Conflict is an opportunity. The world has always had conflict and the world will always have conflict. Conflict is a part of the primordial soup that makes life continue to evolve. That's what conflict is. The question is, how do we engage with, respond to, and how do we move with conflict? And when we can learn how to see conflict as an opportunity and to not become afraid or fearful or closed off by conflict, then we can start to like lean into how to find the opportunity in the conflict to create a new paradigm for living.
So I think that's a wonderful approach. I think, though, also something that you mentioned about listening is, you know, some people talk about deep listening to others. And I know Thich Nhat Hanh would talk about just let people say what they need to say. Let them get it all out. Don't correct them. And for those who may not be aware, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh was a world-renowned Buddhist monk who transitioned within the last, I don't know if it was 1 or 2 or 3 years, something like that.
Yeah.
He passed, was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize by Martin Luther King Jr. So he's obviously, as a Buddhist monk, you know, that was very much about the work that he did, and was actually the reason he was exiled from Vietnam, was because he was, you know, peacefully protesting the Vietnam War.
Yeah,
protesting the Vietnam War. Yes, absolutely. So, but I think, again, to me, I tend to go back to, again, because if there's one, a lot of conflict going on within myself, it's going to come out. And when I'm confused about my identity and your identity, and that I don't see, you know, when my beliefs get challenged and that I confuse my beliefs with my identity, so that if I see you attacking my identity, then attacking my ideas, then I think I falsely believe that you're attacking me. And then I think I got to give you a beat down, right? Whether that's, again, verbally and or physically, in order to defend myself. So I think part of the listening that has to occur is also about listening to my own self, listening to my own thoughts and my own beliefs and my own emotions, you know, and seeing where that mindset, which is driving those emotions and behaviors, you know, where is that coming from? And is it true or not? Is it conducive to inner peace? And is it conducive to external peace? Because I tell folks it doesn't work to want peace in the world and be raising hell at home. So if we're gonna, you know, do the deep listening, what is it that we're listening for, Hawa?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, listening in and of itself is a practice, right? The practice can be cultivated through sitting. Meditation can teach us how to learn to listen. The work of doing active listening, which is listening to other people's perspectives without feeling like we need to respond, that is a skill to master. That's a skill to get really good at. You can practice active listening with your friends right now, you know, today, by just taking a few minutes and just listening to what they're saying without responding or interjecting or providing your own opinions. Deep listening to me is that moment when we can crack through some of the illusion. And the illusion is what we were talking about earlier. The space of the absolute truth and the relative truth. When we listen really deep, when we really take a moment and be with a person and their humanity, right? When we see the humanity in another person, we can listen so deeply that we can see and notice all the stories, all the experiences that have culminated to bring that person into being who the person they are today. And it's not always pretty. You know, we are living in a world where there is extensive trauma through intergenerational lineages of of horrible practices, everything we've seen from thousands of years of colonization and the loss of indigenous lands to slavery, casteism within India. We have trauma that has deeply scarred the human psyche. And that trauma, it goes back hundreds of years, thousands of years even. And that trauma is something that we're experiencing also day to day, right? We are experiencing trauma when we're in the midst of climate disasters, hurricanes, earthquakes, when people are living in places where their homes are being bombed indiscriminately, when they're losing their family members. That's all trauma. And trauma is compounding and compounding. And the deep listening that we're talking about, it provides the opportunity to finally see how the trauma is interlaced within our stories, individually and collectively. And when we can do that, we begin to have compassion for the person that we might be having a really hard time with, the person who we're really angry with, the person who we're really frustrated with. When we are listening deeply, we are connecting to their story. Because it's not just about me, right? It's not just about what I need. It's actually about like our mutual care. And yeah, this person may be doing horrendous, horrible things in this moment. And as you just said, that doesn't define all of who this person is. And the question is, do you, do I, do we believe in restoration, in redemption, in hope? And if we do really believe that, then we think that and we know that everyone has the opportunity and the possibility to be born again and to
Right.
redeem themselves and to change and transform. And deep listening is transformation in and of itself. Just by listening, you are transforming the environment around you by being a deep listener because you automatically cultivate a deep well of compassion, a deep well of kindness. That is completely contagious.
Yes, yeah, so to your point, are we open and receptive to redemption as opposed to condemnation, which is forever wrong, forever bad, without the ability to transform that into something new and wonderful and unique again to start over again. So, you have said a number of wonderful things here. And of course, we're going to have to, we're going to have you come back again and have more of this conversation because we of course can't cover everything, but I just wanted to acknowledge again, the something you were talking about and our differences in terms of how we appear and what we look like, and also our gifts and talents. I say to people, think of it like ice cream. There's about 1,000 different flavors. Nobody likes the same flavor of ice cream. Just because I don't like your flavor, don't make it nasty. Just because you don't like my flavor, don't make it nasty. And just because I'm not your flavor, don't mean I ain't delicious.
I love that. I love that.
So that's one of those ways to think about that. Just again, get into terms of this. Get into this last this last minute or so. Hawa, when we are ramped up, charged up, ready to go to battle, how do we pump those brakes? Tell them to give a few things to pump those brakes when we in conflict so that we can move ourselves to peace. I know we talk about deep listening, but again, when we revved up, ready to go to battle.
Well, one thing, I mean, I've talked about perspective a lot today, so I want to just kind of offer this as part of that perspective practice, right? So to practice perspective, we sometimes, when we feel ourselves revving up and ready to go to battle, sometimes in those moments when we're really, really, really heated and angry, we say things that later we regret. And I think all of us have had that experience where we say something out of the heat of anger, and then later on we're like, damn, I wish I didn't say that. Damn, I wish I could have that moment back, right? And we've all been there. And what I would say and what I would recommend to begin that perspective practice is to, like, when you feel yourself getting really heated, really hot, just tell whoever you're getting heated and hot with, hey, I need a minute. I might need 5. It might even be 20, but I'm going to go outside and go for a walk. We're right now, our voices are really high. We're going through this, like, this tonality, which is not becoming. We're neither of us are listening to each other. We're yelling at each other. Let's pause. Let's come back to this in 20 minutes or even the next day. It's not going to go anywhere. And that 20 minutes, that 30 minutes, that few hours, that's going to create perspective. And that'll be sort of the time that we need to integrate, to assimilate, and then to engage in real conversation, authentic conversation that doesn't require or doesn't, that's not rooted in the deep sort of seated emotion that can have us be moving from a place of anger and instead of place of compassion, you know? So that's what I would recommend doing.
Okay. And just a little, add a little something like I said, because there's so much more to this that we could talk about. I think one of the things too that I've discovered that's really helpful is non-judgment too. If I can mm-hmm. pump my brakes on judging even the situation to say it should be different or expecting people to be like me and they're not.
Yeah, yeah. It requires practice.
Oh yeah. Like I said, I keep trying to tell people, you know, in order to become a professional athlete, it requires a whole lot of practice. And the practice you had in high school, like the same practice you had in college, there's some things you're going to have to do differently to become an expert or a professional. Oh, yeah. So, again, I'm loving this conversation. I'm so sorry that we you know, run out of time, but, you know, and we didn't even get a chance to really talk about your podcast, Evolutionary.
Yeah.
So just real quickly, do you want to, you know, talk, just tell folks about that and how they can connect with you?
Absolutely. No, would love to. Thank you for that. If you're wanting to keep diving deeper into these types of conversations, I have a new podcast. It's called Evolutionary, E-V-E-R, Evolutionary. It's kind of looking at the place where revolution meets evolution and just kind of how nature is in a constant place of change and transformation. It's about science and mysticism, heart-centered approaches to healing and global planetary transformation. You could just type in my name, Hawa Kassat, and you can find that podcast. And if you want to study with me, I've got a nonviolence course coming up, a virtual course on nonviolence coming up in October. It's 4 sessions over the course of a month. There's silent meditation retreats that I lead around the country. You can join me on one of my retreat programs, which is an immersive in-person learning opportunity. So you can find out my teaching schedule, my speaking schedule, by tuning into my podcast and by visiting my website.
I just want to make sure folks can find you if they're just listening. So, absolutely. So is there any other ways that folks need to connect with you? Because I certainly would encourage people to do that.
Yeah, I would say just visit my website. You can go to hawakassat.com. I got a Linktree page as well. The name of the podcast, Evolutionary. So Evolutionary. Yeah, just find the podcast. That'll be the best way to stay connected with me. And I put out episodes every 2 weeks.
Well, Hawa, you know, it is always a pleasure. And I always look forward to this. And it's been a while since we've had one of these kind of conversations. But we need to do again a part 2 and maybe some other parts sometime real soon. Yeah. Because I think this is much needed in terms of what people need in order to kind of heal themselves and transform their thinking, their mindsets, in order to have the peace and the connection that they are seeking for themselves and in their lives.
That's right. That's right. Thanks for having me. It's an honor. I love what you're doing. Love seeing seeing you shine out here. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of the conversation.
So you're always welcome. And so for now, we're going to push the pause button and namaste. I am your host, Dr. Balan A. Durr, awakening and empowering you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. I'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us today in the sweet spot. Share, follow, and like us on social media. To learn more, please visit BalinADurrMD.com, spelled BalinADurrMD.com. Join us next week, and remember, when you heal your mind, all things are possible.